Hey friends, welcome to Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal here with my friend Gayla Grace.
How are you? Hey Ron, I'm good.
Good to have you back. We are in the studio today in Little Rock, and this is another of our You Ask, We Answer bonus episodes of Family Life Blended. This is a little different than our normal episodes, so if you've never heard one of our podcasts before, be sure and check out some of our regular podcasts. We got some special guests today.
We do.
And I think you and Sandy have become friends.
Yes, I would like to say that.
Yes, Sandy would say that as well. You guys worked together on one of our recent live streams that we did on Facebook and YouTube called
Right.
Women in Blended Families. And you guys are going to do more of those.
We are. We are planning one right now, Sandy. I'm excited about what we've got going.
So let me introduce real quick, Don Pestlis and his wife, Sandy Patty, are with us today. Don serves as the Crossings Community Church pastor of chapel worship in Oklahoma City. Sandy is, well, I think she sings, the most awarded female vocalist in contemporary gospel music history, as a matter of fact. And she wrote a book about blended family life, their blended family, called Life in the Blender. Together, Don and Sandy have been married for almost 27 years. They've got 8 kiddos between the two of them and 10 and a half grandchildren. Please explain the half. What does that mean?
Well, we are so honored to be with you all. Ron, it's always good to be with you. And yes, Gayla, I love that the women were getting a chance to have discussions and just, you know, I heard someone say a long time ago that men become better men in the company of other men. Other good men, and women become better women in the company of other good women. And so I'm loving that we have the chance to visit with other women in the blended journey. So 10 and a half, yes, 10 and a
what
half
does that
grandchildren
mean?
Just means
Don,
we have
what's a half grandchild? Another,
yeah, what's the half?
0.5. Well, it might be somewhere between 0.5 and 0.7. Yes. In process. That would imply in process.
Yeah.
And we're excited. Of course, it implies. It's the greatest thing in the world. You know, we just haven't figured out. If we knew how fun it was, we would have started here first with
the
grands.
Don't know how we could do that.
But it is an absolute. It is as fun and crazy as you hear.
Yes,
it is. Absolutely.
All of it. Indeed.
I'm trying to imagine that conversation with God. Lord, can we start with grandchildren instead of the other way around?
No, it doesn't.
I'm sure there's part. I'm sure there's a master plan in there somewhere. You know. Okay. Well, we're doing Q&A questions that people have submitted to us, and you guys are going to join us in those. Gayla, let's get started.
Let's do. All right. Here's a good one. Do we still try to orchestrate the visitation schedule after our kids graduate from high school? We'd love to hear your input on that.
Why don't you get started and you jump in, I'll add color commentary.
So much of what we have to offer and share is strictly personal experience. Mm-hmm. Everyone's experience is not the same. Mm-hmm. And everyone's experience has to be attended to with the uniquenesses of each experience. So I just want to say that up front.
Context.
Our experience, and therefore really flavors our feeling about this, is that once the kids are old enough, and I think graduating high school is definitely in that old enough category, they begin to speak up. Their extracurricular, their involvements tend to dictate their schedule more than whose turn parent-wise. Mm-hmm. And so I very much lean towards the kids sort of dictating, well, it's going to be easier for me to stay here because my cheer uniform is all together at this house. I think it would be a whole nother set of issues if we're still trying to enforce the visitation rules after high school. But you can see I'm tiptoeing because everybody's situation and conversations between both parents mm-hmm. can be a unique thing in itself. What do you think about
that? Well, I like the word maybe facilitate as opposed to enforce.
Yeah,
as you said that.
That's a good word.
You know what? And I agree, Sandy, that, you know, say, for instance, it's a ball game. The events in high school, they're so busy and they're really becoming their own persons and personhood and activities. Those events become kind of, I thought of all hands on deck. Both sets of parents mm-hmm. tend to go to those things. So, you know, his time, your time, my time takes on a little bit of a different flavor. Mm-hmm. I think looking back on our years yep. with the kids at that time, yeah. and it becomes, honestly, we found that, and again, this is unusual for us, but sometimes we did things together as a big corporate family, mm-hmm. you know, some of the holidays, Sandy's former husband, John, would be there at mm-hmm. our, or if we had like a, I'm thinking the high school, I'm thinking also the we called them the triplets. But we had three yeah. graduate from high school
at the same time.
And that open house was all hands
Everybody.
On deck. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, I think what you said is right. Every situation, but it takes a key phrase or a key concept is working together.
Yeah.
You know,
which is not always easy.
Right.
And I just wanted to add one thought that I feel like as the kids get towards the end of high school, there will be a gravitation, perhaps, to one location or the other. I think that mm-hmm. it's up to the parent who is seeming to get a little more time to make sure the other parent is included. Mm-hmm. And that comes with years of counseling, mm-hmm. conversations. Mm-hmm. That's not something that easily happens overnight, but I don't know if I don't know how we could have skirted the answer to this question any better.
No.
But does that resonate
does
with
that
what
sound
with
vaguely,
both of you?
Vaguely specific.
Yes, it definitely resonates with me. It does, because mm-hmm. I feel like also after 18, sometimes kids are living in different places. I mean, they might go to college
right.
and be living in the dorm. They might
mm-hmm.
be, there's a variety of different things that can happen. And so I kind of feel like it's natural that we need to step back and begin to treat them as adults. Mm-hmm. And let them begin to make adult decisions. It doesn't mean that we don't continue to tell them, I love you, I look forward to seeing
right.
you,
yeah.
you
right.
know, because we want them to know they are welcome in our home.
Yes.
I agree
correct.
With everybody. Yeah. I do think, essentially what you guys are saying is kids should have a voice. The older they get,
absolutely.
The more voice they should mm-hmm. have, the more independence mm-hmm. we're trying to give them. That is absolutely developmentally appropriate. Some people listening to us right now go, yeah, but that doesn't matter because my former spouse is letter of the law. And
right.
visitation is visitation. I don't care what the kid thinks. And so we've got to try to abide by that. Otherwise, you know, they're going to take us back to court or something sort of extreme. Hey, if that's your situation and you're listening right now, yeah, sorry. You can't have much flexibility. But you want to try to help your child at the same time, but realize that you've got this other thing out there that you've got to abide by the visitation. Like the law is the law. And if you're going to get in trouble,
mm-hmm, for sure,
you got to hold back on that. One other thought just that might balance the conversation for somebody else who's listening is, I think sometimes people say, Gayla, haven't you heard somebody say, well, but do we have to? Like, is the law, therefore we have to walk out the visitation? Mm-hmm. And you know what? The kid is living at the other home during college. Does the visitation thing still continue? Does it carry forward if we're paying for a majority of, you know, their living expenses or whatever? Hey, just want you to know, legally, visitation is not tied to how much money comes out of your pocket.
Right.
It doesn't
correct.
Give you any rights. And it usually comes to the end of what they call the age of majority, which is legal language for are you 17 or 18 and in your state, therefore you're an adult. And that's when visitation schedules come to an end. So they may be living with you. You're paying all the college bills. That doesn't give you any more rights or less rights mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm, that's right.
At this point, it's about relationship with your child.
That's
not
exactly
about what the
right.
law says.
I was going to say that, you know, sometimes the older the kids get, they'll try on phrases mm. with the parent that maybe feels a little more open. And I think a good response is say, you know what, that's some good thinking there. Why don't you share that with your, other parent? You know, instead of trying to triangulate between, instead of trying to moderate between the parent and the kid, really encourage them, that those are some good thoughts. You know what, mm-hmm. maybe ask your other parent, hey, could I have some time with you to share some thoughts with you?
Aunt Sandy, I think that is excellent. And I just want to point out to the listener how excellent that is. Because when kids are younger, we encourage people all the time, don't make your children the communicator to the other household
That's
about
correct.
Things like this. Mm-hmm. This is a parent's yes. job. But as That's they get right. older and we're releasing them into adulthood, we do want them taking more responsibility for those conversations about the other home and with the other home. So excellent to begin to pull back from mm-hmm. that.
I agree.
Mm. Okay, let's move on to another question. This one's about step siblings. Frequently people ask, how do we help our kids get along? You know, we're trying to improve their relationships. Maybe we could go at this from a newly formed blended family and maybe you've been together a few years point of view, blended family situation. But you guys had a mess of kids when you threw them together. How did you help create... What are your thoughts, whether you did it well or you're looking back with wisdom, what are your mm-hmm. thoughts about helping step siblings develop relationships?
Probably a little bit of all of the above there yeah. you think about, but it's always, I wish I would have known then what I know now, for sure. Okay, and that's so hard. That's such a cliche, but it's so true because, I just wanted it to be the Brady Bunch right off the start, and I thought, I'm a 7 on the Enneagram, so I'm just like my tail's wagging and I'm happy. And this is the best thing that's ever happened. And
you grew up an only child.
Child.
So, plays into that.
Yeah, I was, Sandy says she raised 9 counting me. So, there's so many things, Ron and Gail, I want to say, but the bullet points, but it'll happen over time. You know what? If you sow good seeds of love and faith, but early on, I think I wish I would have allowed, here's one thought, I wish I would have allowed, they're growing pains. There's going to be normal growing pains when mm-hmm. suddenly our kids were all best friends, but yet now they don't go home back to their other house. They're mm-hmm. all together. So I think there are some natural growing pains and some ouching and normalizing. And I wanted so much to be smooth waters that I think I could have embraced those growing pains more and affirmed all those feelings better looking back, knowing now that, 27 years later, the glue, trust Elmer and the glue is going to work. It really is amazing to see what's happened, how much they really do yeah. love each other, yeah. how they really communicate weekly and look out after each other. But there are going to be, initial growing pains.
Yeah.
And allowing those, acknowledging those feelings. I think Sandy did a much better job of that than I did. Embracing those feelings and yet we did do some good things. We went through some good counseling with the kids together.
We
want to talk
about
that.
Made sure they were all in counseling. One of the things that we did was we sort of said, not as succinctly as I'm going to say it now, but we get that you did not choose this.
Right.
So you don't have to like each other, but you do have to respect each other mm-hmm. and respect each other's space. Mm-hmm. And because, we're doing this. And so we totally understood that. Like Don was saying, they were best friends and they're like, wait a sec, wait, we're not ever going home now. So what's the deal? So that was a little bit of a, of a thing.
Learning curve.
The one thing, do you want to talk about birth order that we
could get
we
there.
Had?
Yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and that it hit us later, it's so, and life is so much lived looking forward. And it's so much understood looking back. How about that, huh?
That's good.
And that is like, okay, but so suddenly, I had 3, she had 4, I had 3, then we adopted number 8 into the mix. But what we didn't know, and so we could even talk about this later when we come together as adult kids.
Yeah.
Because they try to reconfigure the birth order again. And uh-huh. It's really an unusual phenomenon that happens.
Yeah.
But we really realized we had two number ones.
Yes.
We had a set of twins that were two. My middle girl was number two.
Two babies.
We both had three. Mm-hmm. Two babies that suddenly didn't become the babies when we adopted the baby.
Right.
So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of mix up and turnover there. Well, exactly.
And we wish mm-hmm. we would mm-hmm. have known earlier that doesn't mean Don's oldest needed to lose his place as number one.
Right.
That we could have two firstborns.
Two number ones. And if we want to win the war, we needed to get number one Anna and number one Donnie together.
Yeah.
You know, not that there was a war going on, but if there were ever, you know, there were moments it was
when they,
us.
You know, yeah. kind of all came together, it was yeah. people lost their place in the birth mm-hmm. order. Yeah. And
yes.
I wish we could have addressed that.
And I'm sure, Ron, or Gayla, that makes therapeutic sense. You guys have an answer to that, but we experienced it. And maintaining that birth order, to summarize again, is key, you know, to in big decisions. And then just in getting in building consensus.
Yes.
And building consensus in the family.
That's a real specific direct answer to the question.
Yes.
Is how do you help the step siblings? I think that's one of the ways acknowledge their place and their station in yes. the family. Yes. Without them feeling like they've lost something.
And in some case, you are recognizing the loss. Hey, I realize you used to be yeah. an only child, totally in charge of the show, and now you're sort of sharing the stage. That's really hard to do. Sorry about that. What can I do to help you? You know, just that. Use that as an end to, you know, connecting with your kid and trying to figure that out.
Right.
Gayla, mm-hmm. I'm curious, you're listening to them. You guys mixed a couple kids and then yeah. had one together.
Yes. So I actually was going to talk about birth order also, because we definitely dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And I had a firstborn, of course, who became a middle child when my husband and I married. And she was a strong child to parent mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah.
And so becoming a middle child was just not okay with her.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so we definitely had to address it. We actually had a counselor who pointed it out to us, because two of our girls just were having so much trouble getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to say, have you thought about the fact that there's a birth order issue here that is affecting these girls?
Interesting, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, very, very definitely something to consider. You know, something else you touched on, Sandy, was about respecting other people's belongings. So, you know, when kids go back and forth, sometimes we need to help maybe the kids who are in the home tell them, just because so-and-so is in here right now doesn't mean that you have access to their things. Because sometimes yeah. that can happen. You know, we need to be very careful that they understand. Well, sure, they still left some of their things here, but it doesn't mean that you get to go in there and borrow things. That can really create hard feelings with step siblings.
Yes, that's
Let
true.
Let me just
you're growing. I wish I had known this too.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just having children; we're raising adults.
Right.
Because what you just described, Gayla, makes them a better roommate. Makes mm-hmm. them a better, you know, all
potential
of that. Mate. And rather yes. than us just thinking we're raising kids, we're raising future humans, adults.
Right.
How can we empower them as adults? And so, Ron, I just jumped all over you and I'm so sorry.
No, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. Good stuff. Before we go on to the next question, I just wanted to repeat what you said that I thought was so helpful. What I heard is we can't make kids like each other, but you can create a climate where it's more likely. And so insisting on respect, not love. You know, the question was, how do you help your kids get along good, have good relationships? Well, let's define, what are we going for here? I mean, good mm-hmm. is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Respectful mm-hmm. is another. Loving, well, that's like, yes, that's the nth degree hope, that's what we want,
mm-hmm.
but we may have to settle for okay
mm-hmm.
Today and on our path towards respectful and then maybe something else. So you just create the climate where it's more likely that they'll get along and find relationship and build it on their own, but you cannot expect that love to happen on your timetable.
And remember, yeah. it is a blended family. And don't,
right.
you know, there's some craziness about the thoughts of, oh, we're going to take a 10-day vacation together and everybody is just going to become best friends. That does not happen in blended families. You just want to go home and throw
pretty
your hands
much
up and say,
any family.
Yeah.
True.
10 days.
True.
Right.
But, you know, we found that in the beginning, it was better for us to do short trips together and give the kids time to kind of begin to form relationships, but then go back home, you know, because
get some relief from it.
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
That's a good
word. Let's do another one.
Okay. How about, even though I'm not their parent, how do I get them to do their chores?
Now we're getting practical.
Well, I'll jump in while you're thinking. You've got that pondering look. This is where I really wish I had understood that I'm also helping raise future adults. That encouraging them to do their chores with appropriate consequences, whatever. Sorry, you can't go out on Friday. Your allowance won't show up until X is done. I would have liked to have known that. Donna and I have always been on the same page. Like, I feel like we use the word a lot in situations. Like, if there's a guest at church, it's so important that the senior pastor hug them from this, you know, figuratively. Like, if there's a guest speaker, for the pastor to hug them, you know, and the congregation see, oh, the pastor's all in. It's important for Don to sort of give me his blessing to be attentive to his kids and help mold and shape them. Vice versa, he needed my blessing to be able to speak into my kids. So I think it really has to kind of begin with the parents saying, hey, this is going to be sort of our role. And then just to see that those things are carried out really is hard. It's like training a dog. It's harder on the trainer than it is the dog. You have to be consistent in whatever those chores that you've laid out, you've agreed to, you've had conversation, you've negotiated, then to be equally participant in the follow-up. Does that make sense? What would you say?
Yeah. I'm thinking of several examples. Go ahead. Did you want to go ahead and respond?
I was just going to say united as a parenting team, I think is what you're saying, Sandy. You want to stay united as a team. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
And I'll say one thing and then a second thing. One example was, you know, in a blended family and rides to school when they were young, you know, we got married, they were 11, 7, 7, 7, 6, 5, 3. And then we brought the baby into that, you know, 6 months in. So there was a lot of shotgun riding to school years. Who gets the front seat, right? Just something simple. Yes. Who's riding shotgun? And my son Donnie would break his neck in the morning to get down there. And right, first at the breakfast table for a while, we said, you know, it's like he's up at 3 a.m. to get down there to ride shotgun, you know, early. But we finally tied some, in the morning, some chores, CBT, clothes up off the floor, bed made, brush your teeth before we see you. And that started mixing up a little bit. CBT had to be checked before you got shotgun. So, you know, that's one fun little thing that we did. But, you know, and I agree with what Sandy, philosophically where Sandy started, and we this question moves a little there, is with her kids, then if somebody has to, if they missed, she had to be the heavy. If you have to be the heavy in disciplining your kids, at that point we learned, you know what, you don't just line them all up and everybody gets a spanking, right? That's that's a little passe. But she's the heavy with her kids. I'm their advocate. You know, if they're in trouble, she gets the discipline and I'm over there like going, hey, it's not that bad. I got you. You're, you know, and vice versa. If I'm the heavy with my three, she could be the advocate. And we felt like we owned Sam jointly, you know?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing that moves into a little bit to discipline, but enforcing chores, tying it to their allowance, you know, no ticky, no laundry.
Right.
But again, to what Sandy said, you're raising up not only adults, but their family units we're watching now. We're greatly influenced, hopefully by the good that we did, but we're seeing, you know, five family units now we get to watch.
Right.
that are unfolding, much with some of the things that we grew and established. Hope that was a clear answer.
Yes. Yeah, really good. Good stuff. Thank you for that. We've already talked a little bit about an hour's child. That's the next question. Somebody says, we're considering an hour's child, having a common child. Sometimes they call it, some people call it the concrete child that helps solidify the family, you know, whatever you want to refer to this child. And they say, what are some factors to consider about having that together child? As we jump into this, I'll just mention, we did an entire podcast on this subject, number 70 with Heidi Farrell, and it's called Having an Hour's Baby. So let me just recommend to our listeners that you look that up. Number 70, Having an Hour's Baby. So what are your thoughts, everybody?
Well, we have an hour's child, and I'll jump in pretty fast. One of the things I would say is, if there's a lot of conflict in the home, if there's a lot of just constant struggles and you're thinking, oh, but I so badly want to bring, I want to have a child with my husband, I would put the brakes on that. I think you've got to be careful that you're not, you need to be in a good place before you bring another child in. So for us, I mean, we had four kids in the home already, and we took our time. We knew we wanted a child together, but it was not smooth sailing for us in the beginning. And to have brought a child in those early years would have been hard on everybody, hard on all of our other four kids trying to blend, hard on Randy and I trying to figure out how to parent these kids together. And we put the brakes on it, and it was 6 years before we had a child together. And Ron, I wasn't a spring chick. I mean, I was 3 months shy of 40 when we had an hour's child.
Wow.
So, but you know, that's what we felt like needed to happen, and I'm very thankful we did.
Now, Don and Sandy, you guys have hours children, but they're adopted hours children. What are your thoughts about that basic principle, though, carrying over? I would think it would be similar even with an adoptive situation. If things are, you're still struggling as a family, you might slow down the adding children. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I would agree with everything, although that's not what we did. I completely agree with kind of establishing a new normal. And Don and I actually, I want to try to tell this story as quickly as possible.
Succinctly, yes.
But Don and I had actually talked about, you know, adding another one to already seven under 11. And I just say, you know what, forget it. And I didn't want to have, I had had four kids. I was done actually bearing, but Don was adopted. So the piece of adoption played a big role. And we'd even talk about, oh, we'd name him Sam. That was Don's adoptive father's name. And then we'd put it on the back burner and say, forget it. And then we'd talk about it, and the kids just were terrible. And then we'd say, what are we, crazy? And put it on the back burner. And finally, one day, I just sort of flippantly said to God, you know, God, if you want something to happen, you're just going to have to drop a baby in our lap. And just really left it there. Well, we had been married only 6 months. And I got a call on a Saturday morning from a physician friend of mine. She delivers babies every day. We've had this baby that was born. The people that were going to adopt him, it fell through at the last minute. If the baby's not placed in a home in 24 hours, he's got to go into the foster care system. You don't know of anybody, do you, looking to adopt? And all of a sudden I'm thinking, so I did pray that prayer, but everything on the page made no sense. We'd been married 6 months, but is this God? So we waited 24 hours to see if another family came forward. I could not, Don, knowing he was adopted, it was very hard for me to think of knowing a child could have a home and then was going into the foster care system. I just could not do that. And so we prayed, we said, God, we need a burning bush. We need a smack you in the face burning bush. We were able to go to the hospital where the baby was, and they wheeled him in, and they had already written a name above his little head in that
little
crib.
Rainbow.
And with a rainbow, and they had already named him Sam, which was the name that we had chosen. And we're like, okay, God, we asked you not to be subtle. Thank you for not being subtle. And we met him He was born on a Thursday. We met him on a Sunday and we brought him home on a Monday. So that is a very unique story for us.
Well, let me just say to the listener,
it was very obvious.
Here's a rule of thumb.
Absolutely.
Throw out common sense and human wisdom. When God does something like that, just chuck it.
Yeah.
And follow in faith, because that's, you know, that is burning bush type stuff.
Yes.
So it's fine that you say, well, that's not what we did. But yeah, I think for most people, because really, the point is, that's what faith is. We walk with God. We listen.
Right.
We try to follow as best we can.
Right.
For most people, the wisdom is, look, if things are already stressful, adding a child, whether it's biological or otherwise, it's going to add a little more stress. You might want to slow that down a little bit. Wait till things smooth out for your family. And I could tell you, that's the research wisdom that has been collected over the years about children being added to blended families. But hey, if God does that, just shut up and follow.
Yeah. How can you deny that that wasn't God? Oh, I mean, what a beautiful story.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so obvious, but it's so funny that, so Sam's perspective, every other weekend, when the kids would go to their other parents, would be, he literally said this to us, why don't I have other parents to go to?
Our child has said that too, Sandy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. And when they're coming back from the other parents' home at Christmas.
Me.
Yeah,
yes.
With all their gifts from another side. Wait a minute, I'm only getting gifts from one set of parents.
It's so.
But, you know, we had literally watched the movie a couple days before that, the original Yours, Mine, and Ours.
We literally did.
Oh, uh-huh.
We had watched it, Yours, Mine,
just
and
for
Ours. Just for fun. And that was really, it really served for us that he really, I don't say blended because we were blending. But it was hers and mine. But he kind of, he was a rallying. It was really a rallying point that made it ours.
It was the first thing that everybody said ours. And
you know? So it did serve, you know, it really was, as we've said, from the Lord. But it really did mix the blender up.
Yeah,
it kind of glued the blender a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, we got one more question. I'm just going to say to the listener about that last one, prayer. Lots and lots of prayer before you move forward on it. Another baby.
Yep. I agree.
Absolutely.
I love this last question because I feel like a lot of people deal with this. It says we feel so guilty about putting our kids through much. So in other words, we've already put our kids through so much. Now we find ourselves treating them with kid gloves. We feel like we're not developing good children, only entitled children. And I just want to say kudos to the person that asked this question, that they are recognizing, we know this isn't good, what we're doing here. And so how can you help us figure out not to raise entitled children? Would love your input on that.
Yeah. And I think as we're starting into the question, one layer is we feel guilty.
Yes.
The child's been through a lot. We're trying to prevent them from having to go through. So we put on kid gloves, which I think is a really fascinating metaphor. We're treating our kids with kid gloves. We want to protect them in every way that we can. And if that means then you don't set boundaries or consequences, well, that's not helpful for anybody, right? That's going to foster that sense of entitlement, you know? It can be really tempting. Were you guys tempted along those lines?
We often reflect, you said you learn, what'd you say?
You live forward,
but we learn backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And we often reflect that we paid the ransom, is how we would phrase it. Just in with us, that we did feel so guilty. We would give in to things, or we would buy things in excess, or we would say yes to something when normally it made no sense to say yes to something. And I think that's where, as I reflect back, I would have liked to have understood, I am raising a future adult. I'm raising a future mom. I'm raising a future dad. I'm raising a future husband or coworker, roommate. That concept, I think, would have helped me be a little more, I get that. you know, whatever in my mind. I get this is hard, but nevertheless, this is still a task that needs to be completed, or, you know, whatever. What would you?
I would agree. I think that you one of the things applicable that we did, and I think it gave, we really wanted to give the kids voice though. Sandy would always say roots and wings. And we wanted to help them find their voice. And you know, one of the voices in a blended family is that of the previous, you know, Sandy, we always said this, that it comes out of every blended family can be born out of loss.
Yeah.
Some sort of loss.
It is born out of loss. And that's, Ron adds, and into ambiguity.
And that can be a loud voice. That yeah. can be one of the voices yeah. at the table. But what we tried to do were family meetings with regularity, with a talking stick. You can imagine, even with dinners, I miss those nights when you just sat and listened like a ping pong ball, the conversation back and forth. But the family meetings where the kids would, we'd give them opportunity to share, you know, the good. One of the things we did at dinner was
high low.
And, you know, dinners became a really special time for us, a focus time that we could come together no matter how busy we were. And family meetings were another one of those applicable, practical, tangible ways that the kids could have voice. We could air out our differences. We could air out concerns. We'd respect each other by giving them the opportunity to finish and listen. Yeah. And it, but you know what? The bottom line is, and intact families face much of the same decisions, whether it's blended or an intact family, not raising entitled kids, holding those kids to responsible, to raise responsible, respectful, kind, caring adults. That it doesn't happen overnight, but, you know, continual reminding, opportunities for them to grow. But I think we did. We held, amidst that, we made sure we were in counseling. We made sure that we were in church. We made those
their youth leaders were, had access to the kids.
Absolutely.
They
it wasn't just us.
No, we
it took
needed
more
a village.
Than it took, that's exactly right. But I think that is a loud voice that has to be acknowledged, Ron and Gayla, the voice, whether of the past, of what helped create the blended family, and address together as you move along. Otherwise, not to be held hostage by
not to be held hostage by our guilt, but to raise good future adults.
Yes.
And I wish I had known that.
More so. Both
so good. So good. You know, I'm sitting here listening and thinking about my own kids and the journey we have been on in, as parents. And, you know, we're never done. They're young adults now, but we're still parenting just in a different capacity.
Yeah,
different
we are too.
Role.
Right.
And, you know, we can all look back and go, I got some woulda, coulda, shouldas about my parenting when my kids were younger.
Absolutely.
And we did the best we could. And it's all about trusting them to the Lord anyway and trying to walk with Him. And so, somebody may be waking up right now just listening to Don and Sandy and us talk, thinking, yeah, you know, I do need to start setting some more boundaries and some limits. And those are scary moments.
They are scary moments, but it's never too late.
That's right.
You know, we don't want to just throw in the towel and say, oh my goodness, I wish I had done this or that. It's never too late. We can continue to guide our adult kids when we see them maybe slipping into patterns that we want to speak into. It's, you know, continue to do that. And pray again.
And pray. Lots and lots of prayer.
Lots of prayer. And let me just add one last thought. One phrase that has helped me, and this came from a funeral that I heard, I was at a number of years ago, and the son was talking about his mother's regrets. And his mother is the one who passed. And he said she got to the point where she could say, I did the best I could with the information I had in the season in which I found myself. And that has been really shifting in a good way for me to be able to look back and did the best I could with the information that I had in the season in which I found myself. And that has to be enough.
That's good.
I can't help, the little therapist in me has got to throw in one more little comment. For all of us, looking back at how we were parented and the good things our parents did and the things not so great that they did, the same is true for them. They did the best they could with the information they had. with the heart towards the purpose that they, and at some level, it's really helpful to embrace that, to accept that that's the truth about them. And maybe that helps you put to rest and find some peace around some things that haven't been great in your relationship with your parent, perhaps. This has been really good, Gayla. Thanks.
Lots of great stuff.
Thanks for being here. Don and Sandy, really appreciate you joining us again on the Family Life
Always
Blended Podcast.
Love.
Thanks for being
pleasure.
Here.
Always love it so much.
To the listener, if you want to know more about their story, episode number 27, it's called Beyond Broken, really lays out a lot of details about their family journey. And let me just say, listener, thanks for being with us. This has been a bonus episode. If you're not subscribed to Family Life Blended Podcast, you can certainly do that anywhere on your favorite podcast app. You can listen on YouTube or through the Family Life app, which gives you access to all of our audio productions. And if you're not familiar with Family Life Blended, we are the largest blended family nonprofit ministry in the country. And we'd love to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. So check out our audio, video, book, virtual and live conference events today. Go to familylife.com/blended. Again, familylife.com/blended. For Gayla Grace, I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for being with us.